Welcome to the Recruitment Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm Tom Birkinshaw and today's guest is Recruitment Entrepreneur CFO, Angus McDowell. Angus has spent the last 6 years working with our 24 portfolio CEO partners on a daily basis, aiding their growth and scale, which eventually leads to an exit event. Angus deals with ensuring that all businesses have a solid financial foundation to allow RE portfolio businesses to grow. Through doing this, there are a number of obstacles and hurdles that need to be overcome in order to be successful. Angus talks growth and what success looks like from a CFO's point of view.
Hi Angus, thanks very much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Good, well look, thanks very much for coming on the podcast. I think today we're going to be talking about thought leadership from a CFO's point of view. We've talked about it in the past, kind of what does success look like? Be really interested to get your views, not just kind of the back end of what that looks like, but kind of where you started. Were you young and thinking finance was where I wanted to go when you were young and setting out from university?
Yes and no. I did an accounting degree, but sort of prior to going to university, I had no real thoughts of that. You sort of knew that I wanted to go out and work in the big bad world and you get experience and so on. But in terms of the path that career would take, no. But did an accounting degree to sort of give me a bit of foundation, a bit of something that I could build upon. I've never regretted it.
So do you have a natural aptitude for sort of like maths back at school? And was that kind of like, your parents were like, this is where you should be going?
I didn't have an aptitude for much academically.
Always helps as a CFO.
But no, yes, I think my brain works that way. It's wired that way rather than sort of artistically or anything like that.
Which is why you're sitting in that chair and I'm sitting in this chair.
But I didn't realise that. I thought everybody just thought the same as me until much later in life. Then I started to realise, oh right, this comes to me naturally and it doesn't come to other people naturally, which is quite helpful realisation to come to.
So where did you do your degree?
Newcastle University.
So originally from Ireland?
Originally from Ireland.
So when was the step over and why Newcastle?
So I finished school in 2003, had a gap year, and so started in Newcastle September 2004. Why Newcastle? I got a list of the Russell Group universities. I then overlaid that with a list of it was Busa back in the day, it's now Bucks. Premiership rugby clubs. I then looked at not a campus university, a sort of a city-based university. I then thought, oh, I better get home at some stage. So somewhere close to an airport, so sort of ruled out like a Durham or something like that. And I was left with not that many choices. So
it's a fine list.
So those are my sort of three, and obviously the degree was really good on. But that was how I came about my choice.
And so after university, obviously very into rugby, kind of did that throughout your term there. And then did you go straight into a job thinking, right, I'm going to use my degree? I mean, in this day and age, when you speak to people, certainly when I do, it's, did you use your degree? I don't know whether that's because of the background I'm in. They're like, no, I've gone into something else. I've got a sales job and I've found a great career path this way. Was that a conscious decision to go, right, I'm going to leave Newcastle now, or I'm going to go into this job, or did you apply to certain firms?
I'll be brutally honest. I got a 2-2, so I played far too much rugby. And didn't do enough studying. And that's a real regret, actually. I think there would have been a lot more doors open to me if I'd have spent a bit more time studying and not as much time playing rugby. I didn't have the sort of, back then the Big Four just wouldn't even look at somebody without 2-1. So I didn't have those opportunities open to me. But I was also, mentioned rugby, I was involved in an organisation called Christians in Sport through university. I went and did a year with them as an intern. And then actually I was offered the opportunity, that was sort of starting to run up to the London Olympics. I was offered an opportunity to stay on there and to get my accounting qualification there. A company was formed to give sort of a church's response to the London Olympics, and I ended up, at age 25, reporting to a board that was chaired by Lord Mulvaney, who was chair of the FA at the time. And so wonderful experience, wow. In the back door, which you learn a lot of my career has been in the back door, but turned out to be a wonderful experience and a really great springboard for me.
Yeah. I think you mentioned, just touching on your degree, coming out with a 2-2, I think there's a lot of discussions on university over the years, the value of it, price of it, and depending on whether you're finance, marketing, engineering, should you go to university? Is it just a life skill or should you do the time out that you did? So when you've suddenly kind of within a couple of years through the rugby channel, reporting to a board at the age of 25 or trying to get your accountancy qualifications, did you ever think, when you were 21 going, I'm really disheartened by the 2-2, that's kind of it, I've kind of blown it a little bit. I mean, obviously you just said now you regret that, but do you think when you got to 25 thinking, well, actually I've turned it around a bit here?
Potentially, I think I definitely was a bit too ballsy back then, so I probably never thought that I'd blown it. and the results, there was a sort of, I knew that I was different to a normal sort of finance accounting guy. I knew that I had people skills and an EQ and ability to interact with people and get the best out of them that was going to stand to me in good stead down the line.
Yeah.
I didn't. I just thought, oh, this is going to be a bit tougher. But in terms of, you were asking about the value of university, I think it hugely broadened my horizons, especially coming from Northern Ireland and meeting a whole load of different people from different backgrounds. It was a wonderful experience. I mean, thankfully it didn't cost what it costs now to go, but it was some of the best years of my life.
And I think, looking back, and I think it's quite an important point to make that, whether you come out with a first or a 2-2, I mean, I went to Nottingham Trent, and it was a really different university to A, what I thought it was going to be, B, the schooling that I had up until that point. So the types of people you met, they've all gone on to be ridiculously successful, but they all got completely different grades. People walked out with that, I just had a life lesson for 3 years, and people walked out with first and went on to do some really great things. During your time, whether it was at kind of Newcastle or through the rugby that you were doing with the church, was there anyone that kind of stood out to you that was like a bit of a mentor and was like, right, that's really going to, there's some things I'll actually learn here. Despite being the bullshy 21-year-old, thinking, actually, I'll listen to somebody and take some advice here.
Yeah, I did listen to quite a few people. I mean, my dad's been great throughout. He was the one that actually encouraged me to study accounting, because... I mean, frankly, I don't know anybody that knows what they want to do at age 17 or 16 or whatever it is you apply for university. So he'd been really helpful and encouraged me to make decisions which keep my options open, but are progressive, taking a step forward. But then the managing director of Christendom Sport is a guy called Keith Proctor, who was my first boss, and he's a wonderful guy. Really helped me. He'd worked in the city and had then sort of given that up to come and run Christensen Sport, and he was a great mentor. There's lots of sort of things that I find myself saying now, however many years later it is, that he taught me and sort of ingrained. So he really helped me in my journey, and I'm very, very thankful to him.
And it's an important point, I think, because I remember even when I was about six, my dad gave me a guitar. I hated the teacher. And funnily enough, I was with my family and we've still got that guitar at home. And I'm like, no, not a chance. I wouldn't know where to start. But, like you had good people around and you advising you. And like you said, at 17, 18, what you want to do then and what you end up doing is 90% of the time very, very different. So having a few people going, keep the doors open, go down this path, it's well worth listening to.
Yeah. And it's important to, I think saying thank you is important. And certainly, those people choosing to invest in you, people giving you time and people mentoring you and so on, a wonderful gift. And I really encourage you say thank you for it, because and keep those doors open, keep in touch. It's brilliant to hear of people that I've worked with in the past and what they're up to now.
Keep the network open.
Yeah.
And I think, in every industry, it's well worth doing, because people jump jobs, different sectors and things like that. And it's always like a handful of people you always end up going back to, even old bosses of mine. And it's the same conversation when you've made a move or you're thinking about it, getting an outsider's perspective, because people move jobs or do things, out of frustration or not fully understanding what they're going into at 17, 18. So getting kind of like the world wisdom from our elders is definitely well worth it. So after the rugby at kind of 25, what was your next step after that?
Yeah, so I qualified as an accountant, and I knew at that stage I didn't want to work in the not-for-profit industry. I found it frustrating, to be honest, that I didn't have something to sell. I didn't have something tangible, and so I knew that I was built for the commercial world.
Yeah.
I was very clear on that, and I also knew, like I've mentioned before, in terms of my CV to date, wasn't sort of the traditional route of, you know, what you think of CFO would be, you know, big four, ACA and so on. And so what I did was went to recruitment companies and put my CV in, got in front of them to help them understand who I was and not just, you know, what was on the CV, because it wasn't particularly compelling. And I made it an aim that I would get into the biggest company I could possibly get. So all the job descriptions that came through, some of the jobs, they were actually really attractive jobs, but with small companies, and I knew that would pigeonhole me down in a certain route if I had another small company on my CV. And so I went for the biggest company I could find, which was Stagecoach, a FTSE 100 company. I got a job there in a finance department of, I don't know, 40 or 50 people.
Wow.
And it was, you know, pretty mundane, pretty boring, but brilliant experience.
And how old are you at that point?
26, 27.
So quite a good age, but a daunting environment for that amount of people in a big company.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, you go into, you know, I was on the seventh floor and I got a pass and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, you had all that sort of thing. But you learn to just people.
Yeah.
And actually, so you find your feet after a few weeks and you sort of get to know who's who and all the rest of how it all works. But yeah, it was an invaluable experience. So you, the reporting cycle is pretty intense for a listed company and the requirements of it and all that. The structure and the rigor of that was just a brilliant experience for me and such a contrast to what I had. And working with good people and taught me loads of really good lessons.
So when you moved into that, obviously, you know, like you said, it's the big building, top floor, you know, suddenly quite an intense...
Quite on the top floor.
Near top floor, getting there. Your rugby, big passion of yours. What happened to that then in the back end? Was it purely professional focus at this point?
Well, we'd actually... So we'd been living in Oxfordshire. That's where Christensen Sport was based. I met my wife there, I got married. But I knew most of my mates from uni had moved straight to London. I was coming down to London for parties and nights out and stuff. And it was an aim. As soon as I got qualified, get a job, newly qualified job in London. And my wife is the same. So we moved into London, which was brilliant and a really great experience for us. The rugby, I had been playing sort of National League rugby in Oxford, which dominated my weekends and evenings training and things. So it was a very clear switch in terms of focus and career, and the rugby took a back seat. So I still played. I joined an all boys team and played, you know, trained once a week and played on Saturday, which was great fun until my body sort of gave up on me at age 30 and I had to pack it in. No cartilage left in my knees, but it was brilliant. And you, if I look now, I'm, you know, 20 years out of school and, you know, 17 years out of university, 16 years out of university. And my best mates now are the guys I played rugby with back then. So it was you know, brilliant for me and a brilliant time.
And I think when, you know, even looking at your job today, you know, or even back then, is obviously mental health over the last 5 years, decades kind of picked up quite heavily. You talk about your colleges being run down and non-existent, you know, and people obviously relate that to mental health at the same time. When you go through sort of like the career path that you've done, which is quite high intense, high pressure, you know, no room for error, reporting to a board, kind of, obviously you don't see it, is that the mental, not the mental health struggle, but kind of the toll that could take on you. Was that outlet then just rugby at weekends, popping down to London to see friends?
Do you know, I've never really thought of needing to protect my mental health. It's never been a sort of active, I must do this, otherwise my mental health will deteriorate. And I think I've been quite blessed in that regard, you know, that it hasn't been something that's weighed me down. It hasn't been a struggle for me. I think, you know, staying focused on task in hand, and, you know, whether that's at work or at home or with friends or whatever it is, it has been a help to me, you know, so that work doesn't spill over to the weekend.
Yeah.
Both, you know, physically in terms of doing the work, but also mentally in terms of my brain being there. And I think I'm blessed with the ability to switch off quite easily. It's not something I've ever had to really consider, but, you know, I think, you know, to your question, if you looked at my life, my diary, how I spend my time, it's pretty well spread.
Yes.
And I think having other interests outside of work is really important. Having things that allow you to switch off, whatever that may be for you, is really important. And those have been great helps.
And I think, you know, when, like you said, when you look back in hindsight, predominantly it wasn't a huge topic of conversation back then. And myself, I look back and think, oh, similar regards to yourself, you know, pretty blessed. And I look back and I think, well, why is that? And I think to your point is, I've been pretty good at switching off when it's switch off time. Because of having a pretty proactive lifestyle, having a couple of kids, like, you don't really have a choice. It's you have to work or family life or see friends. And obviously, you're a father of three, so I don't think you also have a choice. It's kind of work or it's family time.
Yeah.
Which is obviously another, you know, kind of from two sides, you're personal and professional, quite high profile, and you deal with a lot of different individuals on a day-to-day basis, you know, through work. So obviously, you're part of Recruitment Entrepreneur, 25 companies at the minute with joint ventures, very different personalities. You know, having that switch off at home is great, but then how do you manage that? We talk about, you know, what does success look like? You deal with 25 plus now. You know, we've obviously got a couple of CEOs and a few other businesses. When you're, you know, with your CFO hat on, what is that definition of success when you're coming in every day and you're looking at a company that's just started, or, you know, a really mature company, maybe potentially looking at an exit, you know, and you're having those two very different conversations back to back. You talk about being able to switch on and off family life and professional. How easy is that then to migrate through the working day?
Yeah, I like the way you contrast the CEOs of our businesses with my children.
Unintentional, I promise.
But no, I mean, I think, well, firstly, you know, family is a wonderful blessing. You know, I often think, you know, what will I do with my time on the weekend before I had kids? And I wish you could remember and maybe go back there at, you know, some weekends, but no, it's a wonderful blessing, and you know, it's a great, you know, work can be really busy and you can get really involved in it, but actually coming home and seeing the kids just makes it all worthwhile, puts everything into context, it's been a, you know, it's made my life a lot fuller, in terms of where my energy goes, but also, you know, in terms of the enjoyment, and it's brilliant. So I think in terms of the business, I mean, talking to other friends in other industries and in other companies, they can't believe, you know, we have a board meeting week, and we put them all the board meetings into one week of the month, because otherwise our whole month would be doing board meetings. And you know, they can't believe, they're like, how on earth do you manage it? How do you do it? And I don't know, to be honest. I don't really think about it too much. But I think that's where you go back to, okay, you know, I think I've been wired in such a way that I do understand people. I enjoy interacting with people. I mean, if I think back to previous stages in my career where I've been sitting in front of a spreadsheet for too many hours in the day, as far as I was concerned, and I thought, I need to get a job that gives me a bit more variety, where I can use my skill set, technical skill set, but also be able to use the other sides of my abilities and characters that I've been given. For me, it's a brilliant job because it combines all of that. And you know, I find it quite easy actually to switch in and out. You know, so we would have a board meeting of a new startup business, and then at 10 o'clock, say, and then at 11 o'clock, you know, the next one could be, you know, a mature business on, you know, with 40 headcount, and you can switch in between the two relatively easily. I guess because, you know, I know my subject matter, I know the businesses intimately, I spend time with them, and I couldn't go and blag it. I couldn't go and not be prepared. But if you put the time in, if you invest in these people, invest in their businesses, get to know them, then I suppose everything that I, all my input is just comes naturally then.
Yeah, and I think again that kind of is a point of when we talk about what is success is, is understanding what you're good at, but also kind of what you're bad at. Obviously, you've got a great team behind you as well, as lucky I do too. So you kind of think, well, always employ people better than yourself. I think somebody like Steve Jobs said or something, and it's a really poignant point.
I definitely do that.
Yeah. you sit here and joke about it and you think, well, actually, especially in this day and age where you look at the productivity of any business to what it was 20 years ago when you look at, WhatsApp, messaging, emails, how far that's come now. And communication, like you're saying, you can jump from one board meeting to another through board packs, emails, Teams calls. It's a lot quicker and a lot more intense now. When you're looking then to, because obviously being part of the investment committee that looks at all the financials, due diligence and the health of a business or even a launch of a kind of an individual, because we back individuals who kind of like have a dream, have a plan. What kind of stands out for you if you were to give any advice to those people and be like, this path's really interesting to me, whether it's finance, recruitment. What would you say, kind of talking about going back to your mentors that you took away from those when you were younger, what would be kind of your give back to people listening and be like, if this was something you wanted to do, this would be my advice.
Yeah, I think, well, let me answer that question by sort of saying what I look for. So when I'm sitting opposite somebody that's come for investment, there are three things that I look for from them that would make me say yes. The first one is that they've got to be real subject matter experts. So they've got to have a real pedigree in what they do. So their market, they've got to know and understand their clients, have deep relationships, and have a proven track record. The second one is that they've got to be able to lead a team. They've got to be followable. Mm-hmm. And the way I work that out is after I've sat across from them for an hour, I think to myself, would I work for this person?
Mm, yeah.
Because if they can't build a team, if they're not followable, we back people to build businesses and scale them so we can exit them. Logic dictates that if nobody's going to want to go and work for them, then they could be the best recruiter in the world with the best sector, best market in the world, but if no one's going to come and work for them, bit of a problem with that. And then the third thing I look for is the sort of character piece, because I think one of the things about that I've learned about the recruitment industry, I didn't come from that industry at all, but one of the things I've learned is that recruiters can become very successful. They can earn great salaries and be very wealthy working within a business. You've got to have a certain sort of drive to then be willing to give that up to go and start again. And you need to have that drive. So you starting your own business is tough. It's not for the faint hearted. And you've got to have that character that says, I'm willing to go in and into the trenches here and start again and go through the grind of it. And if that person hasn't got the character, then they can be really followable. They can also have a great pedigree, but if they're not willing to sort of really get in and work hard, then that would be a no for me. So I think those three things are what I look for. So if you flip that as head then, in terms of what advice would I give, probably general advice really in terms of career is something that somebody told me lots of years ago, is that you're the only person responsible for your career. Nobody's going to come and do it for you. Nobody's going to come and it's very rare that somebody comes with a golden opportunity. You have to go and push the doors. You have to go and make it happen. So if you're sitting there thinking, I'd love to do that one day. The reality of it is that unless you get up off your chair and go and do it yourself and make it happen, it's not going to happen. If that's you, if you want to start your own recruitment business, if you have a dream of doing that, it's not going to happen unless you get off your chair and go and do it, go and push the door. I love seeing people come in with that dream, with that focus, and the beauty of what we do at RE and what we've built is that we can turn those dreams into reality. And so it might sound a bit cheesy or corny, but you know, we've built an infrastructure where we can harness that drive, harness the followability and the pedigree that they've got, and really create value out of that.
I think it's fair to kind of follow up with that as well. Being an entrepreneur, it is a mindset, isn't it? But also at the same time, just because you do it once and it doesn't pan out to, you know, like you're saying, you get up, go on and do it, and so it didn't work out that time, doesn't mean it's not going to happen for you. There's countless examples of big entrepreneurs around the world that have had companies fail left, right and centre. You know, and I think even this year, I mean, we've spoken to probably two or three entrepreneurs that, not that we've said no to, but we're like, you know, going back to the mentor point that you brought up earlier is, do you know, maybe you're not ready yet, and it could be one of your 3 points. It's just be a bit more of a market expert. You've only got 2 or 3 years. Come back to us in 2 or 3 years. And I think throughout the year, we've probably had 2 or 3 people come back to us and go, actually, let's have another conversation. Mm, like, yeah. Looking back in hindsight, you were right, we weren't ready, but I've seen you on LinkedIn, I've been taking your advice, I've been watching the webinars and listening to the podcasts. Can we have another conversation? Mm. And a few of those times have kind of worked out quite well.
Yeah, definitely. And that's brilliant to hear, by the way, when we get that. You know, I can think of a couple that probably you're thinking of as well. And to have people come back, having put into practice the feedback we've given, seeing the results and being in a position where they are investable now is brilliant. I think the other important one to point out is that, you know, 'cause I think when people hear of the word entrepreneur or think of entrepreneurial as a trait, they probably have a certain character type in their mind, you know, and you know, outgoing and risk taking and all that sort of thing. And you know, when I look at the characters of all the CEOs in our portfolio, there's a huge variety. Mm. And there's not success isn't defined by one particular character trait. So you know, I think if you're perhaps introverted or, you know, I don't know, struggle in a certain area, don't disqualify yourself from going out and going for it, because you know, they come in all different shapes and sizes.
And you also don't know what an investor looks for in people. Yeah. You know, you've given, you know, quite good insights into kind of what we look for, but I think the bottom line is we do invest in people. Mm. And I think, you know, when you define kind of what is success, I think something I always talk to people about is a partnership. If you want some money, you know, and you're desperate to go start your own business and you want to do it on your own, you can sell your car, remortgage your house, go to a bank, get a loan. You know, there's a lot of other ways to do it than whether it's coming via us or other investors. And I think to your point on kind of what is the definition of an entrepreneur or what is the definition of success, it's a really difficult one because it's unique to that individual. It's kind of you put in the effort and you're not going to get a golden ticket. The likelihood is if you work your ass off for it and you put in that time and you listen to your mentors or the people, you know, like us who you partner with, then the likelihood is you're going to go quite a long way. It may take longer, it may take shorter, but there's no sort of like this set path for this exit at the end. Mm. You know, we've got people in our portfolio that have been here for many years and some who are shorter. It's not, there's no right or wrong. And I think going out and making that first step is a really important one. But I think the advice you've given, I think, is, you know, really substantial. I think it's really important. And I think it's been massive help and a pleasure to chat to you, Angus. Thank you very much for your time.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.